Welcome to the deep dive. This time we're diving into the New Testament.
Ooh, exciting.
But we're not just gonna, like open the book and read verses.
Right.
We're going beyond the text, to like uncover the historical and cultural forces that shaped it. Think empires and power struggles and ancient intrigue.
Yeah, it's all there.
It's all
It's
there.
easy to forget that the New Testament wasn't written in a vacuum. You know,
Right.
these were real people, like wrestling with huge questions, amidst some seriously chaotic times. And that context, well, it's key to unlocking the meaning behind the words.
Okay, so before we get lost in the chaos,
Right.
let's make sure we're on the same page when we say New Testament. What exactly are we talking about?
Well, the term testament actually means covenant, a promise and fulfillment between God and humanity.
Okay.
So the New Testament is a collection of documents that testify to God's evolving relationship with people,
Okay.
ultimately culminating in the arrival of Jesus.
So it's not just about old versus new, but rather a story that's been unfolding through parts of an epic saga.
Exactly. The New Testament builds upon and completes the story that began in the Old Testament. It's like the promise and the fulfillment.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
And speaking of things unfolding, let's talk about Alexander the Great.
Oh, yes.
This guy was conquering most of the known world before breakfast.
Yeah.
How does he fit into all of this?
Well, Alexander's conquests were about more than just land. You know,
Well,
they triggered a wave of Hellenization, spread of Greek culture and language throughout his vast empire.
So he's spreading ideas as he goes,
Right.
not just conquering.
Exactly. And it's like the internet age of the ancient world.
Wow.
Massive cultural shifts happening at warp speed.
I like that analogy.
And you know what? This directly impacts how we even have the New Testament.
Wait, really?
Tell me more.
Yeah, tell me more.
Think about it. Before Alexander, the Old Testament existed only in Hebrew. But now, with Greek as the common language, there was a need to make those scriptures accessible to a wider audience. And that's how we got the Septuagint,
Okay.
the Greek translation of the Hebrew scriptures.
Interesting.
The very language of the New Testament emerges from this cultural shift.
Wow, I never realized how connected everything is.
Yeah.
So Alexander's empire eventually crumbles, right?
Right.
What happens then? Does the drama just stop there?
Of course not. It's like any good drama.
Right.
There's always a twist.
Right.
Alexander's death created a power vacuum,
Okay.
and his generals were like sharks circling, ready to grab whatever they could.
Oh, yeah.
Two main players emerged: the Seleucids, who snagged territory north of Jerusalem, and the Ptolemies, who took over Egypt.
Okay.
It set the stage for a whole new power struggle.
And how did this power struggle affect the daily lives of the Jewish people?
Well, imagine being stuck between two empires vying for control. The Israelites were first ruled by the Ptolemies, a period of relative peace and stability. But then the Seleucids took over, and things took a darker turn, especially under Antiochus Epiphanes V. This guy, he was bad news.
Okay, now I need the details. What made this Antiochus guy so terrible?
Imagine this Antiochus not only looted the Jewish temple, a place considered the most sacred space for the Jewish people, he deliberately desecrated it. He even sacrificed a pig on the altar, a blatant act of religious and cultural domination. He was trying to crush the Israelite spirit.
That's horrific, but the Israelites didn't just sit back and take this, did they?
Absolutely not. This sparked a rebellion led by a high priest's son, Judas Maccabees. Think of him as a David going up against Goliath, fighting for religious freedom against a powerful empire.
I'm already rooting for Judas. Did he succeed?
He did. Judas and his forces managed to drive the Seleucids out and reclaim the temple. It's a victory that's still celebrated today during Hanukkah.
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
But as with many victories in history, this one was short-lived. They enjoyed about 80 years of independence, but then a new power emerged on the scene: Rome.
Rome, talk about an empire that changed the world.
Exactly. And their influence was everywhere. They brought Pax Romana, a period of peace and stability under Roman rule, a common language with Greek, and advances in roads and communication. Life actually wasn't all bad under Roman rule, which might surprise you.
It does. So are you saying life under Roman rule had some upsides?
For many, yes. But it was also incredibly complex. Roman rule forced both Jews and early Christians to ask some tough questions.
Like what?
How do you live as God's people under a foreign power? How much can you accommodate Roman rule while remaining faithful. Mm. It was like a constant balancing act.
That's a dilemma that echoes through history, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Trying to live out your beliefs while navigating the complexities of power and politics.
Exactly. And to make things even more complicated, Rome didn't always rule directly.
Right.
Sometimes they appointed local rulers who answered to the emperor. These client kings were a mixed bag, and some were more ruthless than others.
Is that where Herod the Great fits in?
Yes.
The king from the nativity story, what was his deal?
Herod, let's just say, was a complex character.
Okay.
He was a master politician, but also incredibly cruel and paranoid.
Okay.
He saw threats everywhere and eliminated anyone he perceived as a rival, no matter how close they were to him.
So he was more than just a figure in a Christmas story. He was a powerful ruler with a dark side.
Absolutely. There's a chilling story about Herod having a potential rival drowned at a pool party surrounded by guests.
What?
This wasn't a man who took threats lightly.
Wow, that's cold-blooded.
Yeah.
So when we read about Herod ordering the death of baby boys in Bethlehem to eliminate a potential rival, it suddenly becomes much more believable.
Exactly. It's a reminder that the stories of the New Testament were unfolding against a backdrop of real politics with real consequences.
Yeah.
It wasn't all peace and love.
So with all this political turmoil and Roman control, how did early Christians even survive? Weren't they constantly being persecuted?
That's a common misconception in the first century. Widespread, organized persecution of Christians by Rome was actually quite rare.
Really? But what about all those stories of Christians being thrown to the lions?
Those stories are often exaggerated. Or from later periods early on, Christians were seen as just another branch of Judaism,
okay,
which gave them a degree of protection. They weren't yet a distinct empire-threatening force.
So they flew under the radar, at least for a while.
Exactly. That's not to say they didn't face challenges. They still encountered sporadic, localized persecution.
Okay.
Often instigated by fellow Jews or local officials who saw them as a threat.
All right.
But the image of Christians being hunted down by Roman legions across the empire is simply not accurate.
Okay, so the Roman Empire wasn't this evil force systematically trying to wipe out Christianity.
It's much more nuanced than that. Roman rule brought both benefits and challenges, and this complex backdrop is crucial to understanding the New Testament. It's like watching a play where the set design and lighting influence how you interpret the actions on stage. You can't separate the two.
This is giving me a whole new perspective on the New Testament. It's not just stories and parables, it's real people grappling with faith and politics in a very complicated world. But you know what? I think we need to pause our deep dive here. For now, it's a lot to take in.
I agree. There's so much more to uncover, and we've only just scratched the surface.
Exactly. Join us next time as we continue to explore the historical forces that shape the New Testament. You won't want to miss it.
Welcome back to our deep dive into the historical context of the New Testament.
It's good to be back.
Last time we left off with early Christians navigating the complexities of Roman rule.
Right, right.
But they weren't the only ones trying to figure out how to live faithfully under an empire, were they?
You're talking about the Jewish people, right?
Exactly.
They had their own long history with empires and foreign powers, a history full of exiles, conquests, and cultural clashes.
Exactly. By the time Jesus arrived on the scene, they were carrying a lot of baggage. Historical and emotional, all those past experiences shaped how they viewed the Roman Empire, and it influenced their expectations about the coming Messiah.
Okay, so we've got Roman rule setting the stage, but now we're adding in layers of Jewish history and messianic expectations.
Yeah.
It sounds like a pretty complicated mix. Can you break down some of the key groups within Judaism at this time and how they viewed all of this?
Well, let's start with the Pharisees.
Okay.
They were known for their strict adherence to the law of Moses. Think dietary laws, Sabbath observance, ritual purity, all of it. They saw meticulous observance of the law as the key to maintaining their covenant with God and eventually achieving national liberation.
So they were the traditionalists, fiercely committed to preserving Jewish identity in the face of Roman influence.
Yes. You could say that then you had the Sadducees, who were mostly associated with the priestly aristocracy and the temple in Jerusalem. They were a bit more pragmatic and willing to accommodate Roman rule as long as it allowed them to maintain their power and influence. They were more focused on the here and now and didn't believe in an afterlife or resurrection.
So they were more like the establishment, the folks who benefit from the existing power structure and don't want to rock the boat.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
But there were other groups too. The Essenes, for example, were more reclusive and believed that the temple in Jerusalem had become corrupted.
Mm-hmm.
They withdrew from mainstream society and formed their own communities focused on purity and spiritual preparation.
So they were like the ancient version of dropping out of society to live a more intentional life, almost like a monastic community.
Exactly. Then there were the zealots, the revolutionaries. They advocated for armed rebellion against Roman rule, believing that only through force could they achieve true freedom and establish God's kingdom on earth.
So you've got a whole spectrum of beliefs and responses to Roman rule. It sounds like there was a lot of tension and disagreement within Judaism at this time. It wasn't a monolithic group, was it?
Not at all. It was a vibrant, diverse community with a wide range of perspectives on how to live faithfully in a complex world. And into this mix steps, Jesus proclaiming the arrival of God's kingdom and calling for a radical reorientation of life.
That's going to add fuel to the fire.
Yeah.
It's no wonder his message attracted attention, both positive and negative.
Yeah.
How did those different Jewish groups react to him?
It varied, of course. Some were drawn to his message of hope and radical love. Others saw him as a threat to their way of life and their understanding of the Messiah. His message challenged everyone, forcing them to confront their own beliefs and loyalties.
So he was a disruptor, but also a catalyst for deeper reflection. It's like you can't understand the New Testament without understanding this complicated web of Jewish history and Roman rule.
That's right. In the stories, teachings, and even the conflicts of the New Testament, they don't happen in a vacuum. They're shaped by the political realities, the religious debates, and the social dynamics of the time. It's all connected.
It's like watching a play. You can't fully grasp the drama if you don't understand the backstory of the characters and the world they inhabit.
That's a perfect analogy. And speaking of dramatic backstories, we can't forget about Pontius Pilate, the Roman governor who ultimately sentenced Jesus to death.
Oh, yeah. Pilate. He's the guy who famously washes his hands of the whole affair, right?
Right.
What's his deal?
Pilate's a fascinating character, but he wasn't a theologian or a religious scholar. He was a Roman administrator, concerned primarily with maintaining order and stability in his province.
So from his perspective, Jesus was just another troublemaker, stirring up the crowds and potentially jeopardizing Roman control.
Probably. And the charges brought against Jesus claiming to be king of the Jews would have been particularly sensitive to a Roman governor. Any hint of rebellion or a challenge to Roman authority had to be dealt with swiftly.
It makes you think about all the historical forces at play. It wasn't just a personal conflict between Jesus and the Jewish leaders. It was this collision of Roman power and Jewish messianic hopes all swirling together in a perfect storm.
Exactly. And Pilate, as the Roman governor, was caught right in the middle.
Right.
He had to weigh the political consequences of his actions.
So even if he had personal doubts about Jesus's guilt, he might have felt pressured to condemn him to avoid a larger conflict or even a rebellion.
It's entirely possible he was in a no-win situation, appease the Jewish leaders who wanted Jesus silenced, or risk a popular uprising that could damage his career and potentially bring down the full force of Rome.
It's a reminder that sometimes political expediency trumps justice and fairness. It's a tension that we still see play out today, sadly.
It's a timeless dilemma. But it's also crucial to remember that Pilate was operating within a specific cultural and political context. Roman rule was about power and control, and any threat to that power was met with force.
It makes you wonder how things might have unfolded differently if Jesus had arrived in a different time and place under a different ruler.
It's an interesting thought experiment, isn't it? But the reality is he arrived at this particular moment in history, and that context shaped everything. Like trying to understand a piece of music without knowing the key it's written in.
Yeah.
You might hear the notes, but you'll miss the deeper harmonies and the composer's intent.
This deep dive is really changing how I see the New Testament. It's not just a collection of stories and teachings. It's a window into a complex world of empires, religious debates, and personal struggles for faith and identity.
And that's why understanding the historical context is so enriching. It helps us see those stories and teachings with fresh eyes, appreciating their depth and nuance.
I'm already thinking about the New Testament differently, but you know what? I think we've covered a lot of ground for today. It's a lot to process.
Agreed. There's still so much more to explore, but we'll need to save that for next time.
Exactly. Join us for the final part of our deep dive, where we'll delve into the lasting legacy of this historical context and how it continues to shape our understanding of the New Testament today.
Welcome back to the deep dive. We've been on quite a journey, haven't we, exploring the historical currents that shaped the New Testament.
We have, from Alexander the Great to the Roman Empire, from the Pharisees to Pontius Pilate. It's been eye-opening, to say the least.
Absolutely. So we've uncovered all this history, but what does it all mean for us today? How does understanding this historical context help us as we read the New Testament in the 21st century?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? For starters, it helps us avoid imposing our modern assumptions on the text. It's like trying to understand a conversation from a different culture. You need to know the cultural cues and context to really grasp what's being said.
Okay, can you give me an example of what you mean?
Sure. One common mistake is to read the New Testament through the lens of modern church-state separation.
But remember, the early Christians lived under Roman rule, where religion and politics were deeply intertwined. Their struggle wasn't about separating those spheres, but about navigating their faith within a complex and often hostile political environment.
So their context was completely different from ours.
Right.
We can't just assume that their concerns and priorities were the same.
Exactly. Another important takeaway is remembering that the New Testament wasn't written in some ivory tower. It was written by real people grappling with real world issues. Poverty, oppression, violence, social injustice. They were living under an empire that was both powerful and unpredictable.
It makes you realize that the New Testament isn't just a collection of abstract theological ideas. It's a story of faith lived out in the midst of messy, complicated human experience.
Precisely. And that makes it all the more relatable and relevant to our own lives, even centuries later. We still face challenges to our faith. We still wrestle with difficult questions. We still live in a world where power and politics shape our lives in profound ways.
This historical perspective makes the New Testament feel so much more real and alive. It's not just an ancient text. It's a living document that speaks to the challenges of human existence across time.
That's a great way to put it. By recognizing the historical and cultural context, we can move beyond superficial readings and discover deeper layers of meaning.
Huh.
We can also appreciate the courage and resilience of those early Christians who followed Jesus in a world that wasn't always welcoming or safe.
It makes you think about how our own context, the time and place we live in, shapes how we read and understand the New Testament. We bring our own assumptions and experiences to the table, don't we?
We absolutely do, and that's why it's so important to be aware of those assumptions. What are our blind spots? What cultural baggage are we carrying that might distort our understanding? It's a lifelong process of learning and unlearning.
So we need to be mindful of both the historical distance and the contemporary connections we need to honor the original context, while also recognizing how those ancient words still speak to us today.
That's the challenge and the beauty of engaging with these ancient texts. They invite us into a conversation that spans centuries and continents, a conversation about faith, power, justice, and the meaning of human existence.
This has been an incredible journey. I feel like I've gained a whole new understanding of the New Testament. I'm seeing familiar stories and passages in a new light, recognizing the echoes of ancient history in our modern world.
It's been a pleasure sharing this journey with you. And remember, this is just the beginning. The journey of discovery and understanding never truly ends.
I think you're right about that. And who knows, maybe we'll even discover some echoes of these ancient stories in our own lives. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into the historical context of the New Testament. We'll be back soon with another fascinating exploration. Until then, keep diving.